You know, you don't know what you're asking. You know, is it that it's too great for them to ask? Is it that they just kind of have missed something? But it's the sense that they don't get the reality of the situation. And then he says, you know, can you drink the cup I drink? Be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. And they're like, yes, we can. They're straight like, yes, we can do this. No problem at all. We're right behind you. Nothing to worry about. We can earn those places. They're ours by right. And Jesus responds straight away, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those who have been prepared. And I don't know about you, but you kind of maybe expecting Jesus to go, well, obviously, no, you can't. When they say, can we, you know, have these seats and can you be baptized? Yes, we can. And but Jesus goes, no, actually, no, you will drink the cup that I drink. You will be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. But ultimately, you can't sit on my right or my left, because that's not for you to decide. It's not actually even for seemingly him to decide. And in part, Jesus is setting up before them the reality of what is to come, that actually their lives are not going to carry on all gloriously wonderful till they end up in some retirement home on a sunny beach drinking whatever they would have drunk back in those days, you know, and just enjoying life. That's not what is in store for them. But also Jesus is reminding them that actually there are bigger things at stake here. And I love the fact that you then kind of scroll on to verse 41 and the 10 hear about this and, well, they're not best pleased, are they? I mean, imagine we wouldn't be if they were in their situation. If someone kind of secretly sneaks in and tries to get one over on us and we didn't think of it first, then we're kind of going to be a bit put out. And I wonder, I was reflecting on this, I wonder whether, a bit of an aside, you wonder with the disciples, whether there would have been that kind of brotherly kind of, you know, infighting where they would have literally kind of wrestled and, you know, duffed each other up a bit when these kind of things happened. Because it happened a lot. Time and time again, you kind of seem to have one kind of jumping ahead or one trying to do this and that sort of thing. I mean, I only have two sisters. I never had a brother, so I can't really kind of relate entirely to that whole kind of slugfest that often is depicted as a brotherly relationship. But it's not the first time that it's happened here, this infighting and this sense of kind of trying to, you know, well, not being happy because someone's trying to get over on each other. But then actually, if you just think about it for a moment, Jesus called quite a diverse group to be his first 12 disciples. It's for another time. But you go in, you look at each of them, and actually, we wouldn't choose them, I'm sure. But he chose this diverse group to reach what is a very diverse world. And so he calls them together. And he says in verse 30, 43 and 44, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave to all. Jesus has just said to them, you know, in verse 42, this is how the world sees it. You know, this is kind of the hierarchy when you look around you. But actually, no, it's not about that. I want to turn it completely on its head. This it is what you should be doing as you live your lives, as you follow me. And if you go back to the beginning, earlier in the chapter, verse 32, it says they were on their way to Jerusalem. And Jesus, he knows where he's heading. He knows where he's going. Not literally just on the sense that they were on the road to Jerusalem, so they were going from A to B, and so obviously they're going to end up there. But he knew what was in store. He knew what was going to happen. Doesn't mean, as we read later on in Mark 14, that he goes easily to the cross. There's that very powerful passage where he's kind of wrestling with himself in the Garden of Gethsemane. But that doesn't mean that he was completely unaware of what was at stake. I read the sense that for Jesus, he wasn't going on, it wasn't about pilgrimage, it was about passion. Whereas for the disciples, I imagine they did think it was something of a pilgrimage. It was something about of a journey that was going to arrive in Jerusalem, and everything was going to be great there, wasn't it? It was all going to come together. It was all going to work itself out. But yet we still see these disciples fumbling their way through, unsure really of what is actually taking place. If you go to chapter 9 and verse 36, that powerful image, Jesus, it says, he took a little child whom he had placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who has sent me. And seemingly only a few moments later, a little while further on, you've got the disciples again are trying to actually get in front and are missing what Jesus is saying, missing what he is seeking to set before them. And James and John have very much missed the whole point as they come to him and they say, kind of, one of us wants to sit on your right, one of us wants to sit on your left. We want the best seats that are available. We want the ones that everyone will have got up very early to try and get with their towels or whatever it is. And so they put in their request. I think one thing to note within this is for us, when we think about, you know, the phrase right and left, on the other of your left, in your glory. Glory maybe says to us kind of heaven, eternity, something beyond this human existence and that sort of thing. For them, I believe it would have signified something of a knees up in the capital, that Jesus was heading to his glory, that he'd been alluding to this stuff that was going to take place, and it was obviously going to come to a head, and in that moment it was going to be amazing, and they wanted to be there, right and left of him. Reality for Jesus is that his throne was going to be a cross, and his crown was going to be made of thorns. Wasn't what they had in mind at all. We see in each of the predictions that Jesus makes about his death, if you look in chapter 8, chapter 9, and chapter 10, these three inner disciples, on different occasions, kind of just are completely off point and completely in the wrong place in terms of their understanding. But yet here we see that they're all culpable. Because all of them are actually kind of getting in on the mix and kind of going, actually, well, I wish I'd thought about it first. I wish I'd actually stepped up. Actually, yeah, I think I've done enough to warrant that place and that position. And part of me, as I was thinking of this, well, shouldn't that be our desire? If we stop and think about it for a moment, shouldn't we want to get as close as possible to Jesus? A few weeks ago, I was in Hyde Park with my dad and my sister. We went to there's a week of music festivals where they kind of shut off a big area of Hyde Park and they have a headline act each night, and then throughout the afternoon, these kind of support acts. And we were there to see Phil Collins. And so we arrived at 3 o'clock and we kind of watched various bands that, yeah, probably shouldn't have bothered to, and throughout the afternoon, and then got in the evening, and it was amazing. But you kind of bought your ticket, you got in, and there was security and all this sort of stuff. And as we kind of found our spot, 3 miles from the stage, you kind of spotted there was an area to the side, and there was this booth, and you could go and pay extra money to upgrade your ticket, to pay extra. And when you kind of then looked at it, you could see that if you paid extra, you went through this gate and you kind of were taken right down the side of the whole crowd. I mean, there's 65,000 people there. You're right down this, and there's this other area. And suddenly you'd have been within maybe kind of 50 to 100 feet of the stage rather than kind of, you know, 3 miles or so. And there's part of me that sat there going, oh, I paid good money for this, and why should others get closer? But there was obviously that sense of these individuals going, well, actually, I want to be as close as I can. I want to experience as much as possible of this moment. And there's part of me, as I've reflected on this passage, I wonder whether sometimes, do I have that desire? Do I actually crave to get ever closer to Jesus? Their agenda was wrong in this passage. They were looking at things from a wrong perspective. But I wonder whether sometimes we need to ask that question. Do we actually want to get close? Or are we content just sitting back and kind of half engaging, half receiving, half connecting with God, but not fully encountering him in all that he has for us through our relationship with Jesus? I thought about it this way this week. If 13 years ago and 13 days, when Emma and I got married, I'd said to her, you know, I do. I'm going to give you 2 hours a week, okay, of my time. You can have 2 hours. I'll let you decide when you want it, but you can have 2 hours. Or if I'd said, kind of, I'm going to give you kind of a slot each day, but you've got to fit it around. It's got to fit around me. And there's a window there as well. You'd kind of go, that's ludicrous, isn't it? Because that's not the idea. The idea is that you kind of commit and you want to get to know each other. You want to grow in relationship together. You want to spend time together. You want to be something that actually you don't kind of 13 years on kind of go, oh, well, that's a bit awkward, wasn't it? I'm stuck in it. No, you go, actually, I love it and I want more. But yet with our relationship with God, I wonder whether sometimes we kind of go, well, I want to know Jesus. I want to follow him. But then actually, I'm going to fit him into certain parts of my life rather than going, I want you to have everything. And I want you to, you know, get ever closer to me and the relationship to be ever stronger between us. The other question, not only in terms of just looking at closeness and our actual commitment, but then there's also this question that Jesus raises in terms of our heart, I suppose. This whole phrase where he says, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, verse 43, and whoever wants to be first must be slave to all. And it's that question for me, am I really willing to serve? Am I really willing to be a slave? That's what it means to follow Jesus, to give myself completely over to him. You know, as the passage concludes, you know, it talks about the fact that that's what Jesus did. And he's the Son of Man. He's you know, the second person of the Trinity. He's God. And he did it. But yet, how many times do I find myself in a position where I go, yeah, but I don't think I need to do that. I don't really need to kind of push that deep or engage that fully. Whereas actually, I believe even more so, I should be going, yes, I want to serve. I want to be used by you, God. I want to make a difference for you wherever I find myself. Take me, take all of me, and do something truly amazing. If we go back to my opening remarks, I said it's not about seat allocation. And it isn't. Because it's actually much harder. It's about going, what difference is following Jesus going to make in my life? What impact is it going to have in terms of who I am? We look at Jesus and he modeled throughout his ministry what it meant to serve. I think that when he washes his disciples' feet is one of the, you know, often used but very powerful image of his willingness to stoop down and actually do what needed to be done. A friend of mine the other day, a vicar, he said to me, these are the words he wrote down in a message. He said, it is just lovely when a homeless bloke you've not seen in a while drops in to let you know his life has improved and he is in a safe place, his own home. I share that because as my mind works that through, my friend must have obviously engaged and supported and connected with that guy in some way, shape or form. Because I don't think those who are homeless, who then manage to sort themselves out in terms of accommodation, suddenly start coming around and telling people at the church if there's been no connection before. There was obviously something, and I don't know what it was, but there was obviously something that meant that guy felt loved and helped and supported and cared for. And it's for us to ask that question, you know, what does it look like for us to serve? What's it going to mean? In many ways, it would be very easy if there was verse 44.5, you'd somewhere between kind of the word all at the end of verse 44 and four at the beginning of verse 45. If there was another section in there when Jesus then kind of expounded upon this and said, well, actually, for those reading this in battle, in kind of some 2,000 years' time, this is what you need to do. And if you're sitting on the fourth row, second across, you space, or, you know, that doesn't work like that, does it? Because that's not what it means to be in a relationship with Jesus. It's not about a sense of you need to be here at that time, do this and so on and so forth. It's about actually going, how are we open to what God is saying? How are we seeking him? How are we listening to his voice? And how are we willing to step forward into whatever he is saying? For me, I work through a similar sort of process. I think about what are the different areas of my life. I think about the different kind of, you know, places that I go. I think about the people that I meet. And if I actually commit to give any time to really work through that, I end up with a whole load of possibilities. Work through my attitudes. And again, I'm suddenly set up for weeks and months and years of things that I can be working on, and I can be seeking to address, and I can be seeking to do as I serve God. But I've got to be willing to actually do anything about it. I've got to be willing to take that step. As we begin our summer series, Be Our Guest, next week, working through the morning meetings, we're going to be looking at what does it mean to be a welcoming people? What does it mean to be those who others would want to actually kind of return to, if you will? To actually go, yeah, I feel so welcome, so loved, so cared for that I want to come again. I want more of what you've got. Because I think we do need to be working through practically what does it mean? How are we going to live our lives in a way that is different to those around us because we've got Jesus in our lives? There's a guy called Lamar Williamson. When thinking about discipleship, he said, discipleship means more trouble, not less. It puts us in a permanent minority status. Jesus, in this passage, I believe he raises the bar for his disciples. And he says, again, you've missed the point. You haven't quite got it. But let's just move on. And this is what it's about. And actually, this is where you need to be aiming for. This is where you need to be seeking to live. This is what it means to follow me. And I wondered whether maybe there's some of us this morning who actually we need to recommit that in our lives. Of actually saying, I really want to be used by God. I really want to draw close to him afresh. I really want to make a difference as I serve him in the world that I'm a part of. Particularly struck me as we kind of head into the summer as well, because now's the time when we can all just sit back and relax, and because people won't be around, there'll be holidays and it's all a bit different, and we'll kind of re-engage again in September and then start thinking about stuff. Was irrelevant of what's going on in this building and on a Sunday, I still need to be seeking to move forward in my faith, in my relationship with Jesus. If I'm just going to park that for 6 weeks, then there's something very wrong. Jesus shows us who we are, and I believe he shows us who we can become in this passage. May we seek to draw ever closer to him. And may we seek to serve him with all we are. Let's pray. God, I want to thank you for the truth of your word. I want to thank you for the fact that every single one of us is able to draw close to you. I pray that you will speak into our hearts, into our lives. If we know you already, that you will help us to take a step forward, further on in you, Lord. To not sit back or settle, but to crave an ever deeper relationship with you. And for those maybe this morning who don't know you, who haven't yet decided to follow you, I pray, Father, that the thoughts and the different things going through their heads and their hearts, I pray, Father, you'll bless them, Lord. I pray that they'll know that they're loved for right where they find themselves now. But I do pray, Lord, that they too will discover your love and your passion and your power and the difference that knowing you can make. In your name we pray. Amen.